We can provide you with the link. I'm going to open this session by doing so, and then we can list the question. The people of Gaza did not consider in their worst nightmare that they were see such a thing where the patients would be targeted without any ability to conduct any response. However, when the Red Cross Federation and they were working on the evacuation, which should be protecting the people and civilians and under conflict, these organizations that were not did not dare to call the Israeli occupation by their name, and they tried to use a passive voice in mentioning what's going on, and they're unable to stop the airstrikes from bombing and bombarding the people, the Gazan people. And this is the accomplice. This mentions that the international community is accomplice. This is targeted attack and bombardment against hospitals, especially a Shifa hospital, where the Ministry of Health has declared it out of service. At Shifa Hospital, there are two infants, newborns, who were pronounced dead due to the power outage, and many of the doctors are using unconventional manners just to protect whoever they have from the patients based on available means they have due to the power outage and the fuel outage and their inability to continue to provide services. The Palestine Red Crescent Society has announced that only 18 ambulances are active. However, they might be out of service due to lack of fuel. In addition, PRCS has pronounced the hospital out of service due to fuel. I unquote here. She was reading too fast. And we sincerely feel that helpless. We're unable to express the feelings that we have. We're unable to express the amount of accomplishment against Gaza. In the description of this session, there was a report released by the UN, where they were warning that the Gaza Strip will be unlivable by 2020. And now we're at 2023. And we're at ground zero, as they mentioned. This has been 3 years ago since ground zero that they were warning us of. Now we're talking about ethnic cleansing, and we're talking about genocide for the Gaza Strip, which has, anyways, been under attack, and their infrastructure has been under attack for a while now. Today we're going to hear from representatives of civil society organizations. We're going to start with Mr. Badr Zamara. He's from Sharik Forum, Youth Forum. Mr. Badr started as a volunteer with the UN for 5 years. He worked hard to ensure that Sharik Youth Forum would be a platform for creativity. He also has worked on establishing the very first village for youth in Palestine and the Middle East region. It has become one of the monuments of peaceful resilience and resistance in Palestine. And I would also like to welcome Ms. Nibal Farsakh, the spokesperson for the Palestine Red Crescent Society, and also from the Gaza Strip. I'm glad to have Mr. Nidal Al-Akhras. He's the coordinator for Sharik, and he also coordinates the activities of Sharik in Gaza Strip, occupied Gaza Strip. We would like to start with Sharik. Let's start with Sharik Forum, and then we'll give the floor to Nibal. I'm not sure if Nibal is among us now or not. Yes, she has joined. That's great. Afterwards, we would open the floor to Nibal. I would like to hear from each of the panelists and welcome the attendees. The attendees are more than welcome to post their questions in the Q&A box, and my questions are going to be used for the opening remarks. Please, just to give an overview to our attendees, can you tell us what's allowed to enter Gaza if there's any allowance, if there's any humanitarian aid being delivered to the occupied Gaza Strip. And please clarify about the systematic hunger and collective punishment against the Gaza Strip. Everything that has been going on and all the humanitarian aid provided to Gaza is not sufficient for the Gazans, not even for one day. And if the international communities are labeled as accomplices and they're the ones who have the most power and influence in this, can the civil society organization replace the international community? Would they be able to reclaim funding, which is the title of our webinar? Or did we regress to a worse situation than we ever been, where Gaza would be isolated from the world and isolated from Palestine altogether? Is this going to continue, or are we going to be set to a point of no return? The other question that I would like to mention, the influence of the cutoff of funds by the donors. I'm not sure if the Red Crescent Society would like to comment on that, but also I would like to hear from Shadik on this. And the last point to mention, I would like to discuss all the support and funding being provided and collected on behalf of Gaza, because currently the situation right now is not about money or funds, because there's a lot of fundraising. However, unfortunately, none of it is allowed to enter to Gaza as need be. Also, there are several concerns. Do you believe, some people are asking, would really the most needy receive these funds or not? Mr. Badr, please go ahead. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for this initiative. This brings me back directly to the reality and various issues that we have discussed back in 2008 when we started Shadik Shabak, and in 2014, 16, 17, 20, 2021. These are horrendous memories, how we started helping people by what we could. We used to purchase from Gaza directly, and I can tell you the situation right now, this is totally different than any other time. This is unprecedented, even in terms of targeting the civilians, attacking hospitals, bombarding. I don't want to be repeating myself here. We all know that the situation here, that we are left stranded one way or another. We are, even in 2014, when we were in 52 days of war, or at under attack situation, where okay, the storage houses were still there. We purchased some products, and unfortunately, these storage houses were affected or attacked. So the resources for the food resources, the bakeries have been attacked, because even purchasing from Gaza, as you've mentioned, Bisan, even if we do have the money, we won't be able to provide the necessities. I totally know that many people have money, but they aren't able to spend it. There's nothing to do there in Gaza, nothing to purchase in Gaza. Being able to have a quick response, just the next day on the 8th of October, they said, what are we doing? We said, what's coming is worse. And we can see just after one day, Rafah border was closed, and then everything else was closed down, and people were unable to deal with the situation. What we're saying, this is a complicated situation and a dire situation. Just minutes ago, we were talking to people in Gaza. Would we be able to continue if things continue the way they are? No, we're unable to do so. So there's no sustainability. Everything that enters is entered by the Palestinian Red Crescent Society and the UNRWA, and this is not for sale. This is being delivered within the shelters here as people working there, and we have people on the ground. We need to announce that there's a catastrophe hindering the people at their own homes. There are statistics that homes, regular homes, have 40 to 50 persons living in them, the youth centers, wedding halls, everything, where every venue that has thousands of people do not receive any services. The UNRWA people are not going to die in there. There are some, one way or another, there are some humanitarian aid and supplies being delivered to them, but at a minimum, they are bare minimum or even below minimum. However, Nidal knows I was talking about a status where people have nothing, nothing at all. And they are people who used to be very, who used to be well off. However, they're unable to provide for themselves and fend for themselves during these situations. If things continue to do so, civil society organizations could not replace the international community because all of us together, including UNRWA, we're just drops, like droplets in an ocean. There's nothing to do. When there's an earthquake, which earthquake disasters would leave 100,000 persons martyrs in 1 minute. And then at the end, the symptoms end, the earthquake happened. But what's going on in Gaza is every moment we're dealing with new bombardments and new atrocities. What happened at the hospital right now, no one could ever deal with the situation or respond to it effectively because, unfortunately, the situation that's ongoing on the ground is the ongoing bombardment and atrocities is rendered the international communities, international societies and organization, including UNRWA, helpless. They're unable to address the situation, the escalating situation in Gaza. And what I would like to conclude with is we now need to think not only about the funds and aid. What we need, first of all, is to address the medical cases due to the severe situation they're living in. And secondly, ceasefire without any other further discussion. We're not talking about having up until now in modern history, there's no other case such as this. This is unprecedented. It seems that there's something in between the lines. We are left helpless. Everything that we're doing in order to be honest with ourselves, everything that we're doing is barely providing the bare minimum. We do not have any accomplishments at all. The accomplishments would be seen after ceasefire. What we're providing in terms of humanitarian aid is nothing. It's just like droplets in an ocean. So if 100 fleet Air Fleet provides support and humanitarian aid to Gaza while the fire is not ceased. There's nothing to do. We're talking about hospitals being put out of service. We're talking about a humanitarian crisis. Another issue regarding fundraising, there's many donors who are concerned, and those who have provided programs in the past are considerably concerned, and they're not thinking about providing funding soon. And I, to be honest and professional here, all the organizations, and here I'm saying most of them, what they're doing, they're trying to refer their previous programs they're going to set direct them to Gaza. However, afterwards, that's going to end and be depleted. And I believe even countries would not be able to provide for the catastrophe in Gaza, even the aftermath, we're going to see the pain of people and we're going to see the need for infrastructure and all that, which even countries won't be able to provide. Thank you. There are many questions. I believe I would like to hear from Nidal if he's still with us. Nidal from Gaza, can you hear us? Nidal, due to connectivity issues and internet connection, he sometimes signs in and sometimes signs out. Nibal, if you can hear us, you can go ahead, ma'am. Best of health. You're muted. Please unmute yourself. Hello, and best of health to everyone. Best of health to you, Nibal. Go ahead. Regarding the humanitarian situation in general, or what exactly? We have provided an overview of what's going on. The Palestine Red Crescent Society is announcing or has mentioned that 7 out of 18 active ambulances in the northern part of Gaza might be out of service soon due to lack of fuel. How can we provide aid if there's any way to provide aid to the Gaza Strip? And what's the role of the Palestine Red Crescent Society? How do you communicate from Ramallah, the headquarters, to the Gaza Strip? What kind of aid are you providing, especially during the unjustified lack of presence of the Red Cross and other international organizations who have abandoned their obligation towards the Palestinian people? Unfortunately, due to the health crisis in Gaza, especially in the north, we have been beyond the catastrophe. We're now in beyond catastrophic situation. We only have one hospital, which is Al Ahli Hospital, which have bare minimum. We only have two doctors who are working there with at the hospital, with not sufficient or any medical supplies. In the north, we only have two hospitals who are able to receive patients. The other hospitals, as we've mentioned, we have 22 hospitals out of 35 hospitals in the Gaza Strip have been out of service, have been put out of service, and the rest of the hospitals in Gaza in the north are in dire situation. They're either under siege. For example, Ashifa is one of the biggest hospitals which has been put out of service and also under siege. So no one is able to enter or exit the hospital. We at the Palestine Red Crescent Society, even Al-Quds University, the second biggest hospital in the Gaza Strip, we have announced that this hospital has been put out of service after 1 week of calling upon and appealing towards the international organizations and humanitarian organizations. This hospital was left to fend for itself. There's no food, no water, no power, not for the medical teams or the patients. Continuous bombardment 24/7. The hospital was fully isolated, and everything, all the ways and all the roads, sorry, leading to the hospital are fully closed. No one is able to enter or exit the hospital. And in addition to that, communications have been out. So for the 6th day, we're unable to communicate with our colleagues at Al-Quds Hospital. This is the 6th day in a row. The communication tower has been bombarded. And the only way for us to get there, to hear from them, is through the wireless dispatch. And of course, that's not fully good. Maybe every hour or so we receive an update from them. We think that they might be martyred or bombarded, and we have no idea about this because we would not be able to communicate with them. We have nothing to communicate with them except for our wireless dispatch devices. It's very hard to express how my colleagues and I feel, especially that ever since the attack on Gaza, we have been calling upon the international community. Since the aggression, we have been calling upon the international community as well as the partners to provide the support needed. That hospital and many others were left or left alone and defend for themselves despite the lack of medical supplies. We don't even have sufficient fuel, a full power outage, full food and water outage. Even the cargo that was supposed to enter to Al-Quds Hospital has been shot upon. And so we only have left the medical supplies, which was left in the middle of the street after it was bombarded, and no one was able to collect it and deliver it. The other shipment had water and food, which has been put at the Shifa to be able to be transported to Al-Quds Hospital. But due to the risky situation, we left people without food and water up until the hospital was announced out of service. And even after we were left to fend for ourselves, the displaced person, internally displaced person, had to walk under threat, under risk. Some of them were martyred, some of them were wounded and injured as they were moving away. And after the tanks receded, they had to take a risk and walk in the street to go. So that took 2 days of people walking to be able to displace themselves or to move from one area to the other. We had 300 persons from the medical teams, patients, and their families the families who are accompanying their patients. This has nothing, this is far from humanitarian. You can see lack of hygiene. There's no water to even wash up or cleanse themselves. So the situation we have, an imminent threat that we're unable to face. We were supposed to coordinate with the Red Cross to be able to evacuate people. However, at the deadline, the tanks got closer to the hospital, seized it, and continued its bombardment, and did not end the ceasefire, and did not allow the shipment from ceasefire to come and evacuate the people. So they were unable to come in, and they had to go back to the south again. In Gaza, we only have five active ambulances in Gaza in the north. Only five out of 18 are, so not even seven, they're only five, because two ambulances are stuck at Al-Quds Hospital. Five are working active in two areas in Gaza and the north. And of course, they're unable to meet the needs. These are five from the PRCS ambulances. Same thing with other service providers. The numbers are dire because most of the vehicles were either bombarded or due to lack of fuel, they're unable to continue. As you've mentioned, those active are barely able to provide services up until the fuel is. So the streets are full of mortars. Wounded people laying on the ground. We're unable to get to them because the Israeli tanks are at many of the areas. They do not allow ambulances to get close to these areas or to close to these people. They start assassinating the medical teams and ambulances. We're receiving calls. We feel totally helpless with all it me with all what it means when we have a family that have 10 martyrs and much many more injured and people under the rubble, and we cannot provide our services as a humanitarian organization and an organization that's supposed to rescue the lives of people. We're talking about providing ER services and response services. Unfortunately, there's no coordination to ensure the safe entry of our teams and our ambulances to respond to people. We are at a point where people are trying to call my numbers, my colleagues' numbers, any phone number that they have. Each person is calling for an appeal. They're saying we are under siege in our homes. We're unable to evacuate. We want to evacuate, but we can't because we're under siege. There's continuous bombardment 24/7. The tanks are in front of our homes. They have mortars. They have injured persons and wounded persons and persons under the rubble, but they're unable to get to them. Other people are unable to call us. They have patients, they have chronic diseases, persons with disabilities. Some persons are unable to walk kilometers just walking in the street on streets that are actually bombarded and not accessible for persons with disability. Some people, if I have a father or a son or a brother who is disabled, the family are not going to leave them and abandon their child. They're going to stay with the person with disability or their wounded person or their a chronically diseased person and stay with them, and their life is under threat. What's going on is unbearable. There's no word that would be able to describe what's going on in Gaza. There's no food, no water, nothing. Even for bread, bread has been cut off for the last 5 days because there's no fuel at these bakeries, for those bakeries which were left and were not bombarded. We don't know what to tell the international community for them to understand how catastrophic the situation really is. The civilians have been bombarded. Medical teams and hospitals have been bombarded. What's going on is systematic war crimes against Gaza. When they started besieging hospitals and targeting hospitals, we have received evacuation orders for over a month, and we said we cannot evacuate. We cannot leave our patients. We cannot put their life at threat or jeopardize their life. They seized us, besieged us. They did not allow any humanitarian aid to get to Gaza or the north in order for them to the end to get to nowhere where they really want to push us into a corner. What should we do? There's no food, no electricity, no we worked with a generator, a small generator. The team started using the lights of their phones, and now we're working on oxygen canisters. If these oxygen canisters deplete, then what are we going to do with the incubators? Babies in incubators are also going to die. We do not have a choice. In line with international humanitarian law, those who are able to stay should stay and should be able to be protected. They should be under the protection. All the civilians and persons who decided to stay and not evacuate in Gaza and the north should be under the protection of international law. Those who have no choice, when you have a person who's depleted, when you have a person who's unable to walk, of course you're going to stay with your family member. And hospitals cannot just surrender and say, yeah, let's surrender and evacuate. What do you want? You want people to die under rubble and no one rescue them? You want people to die at hospitals? I cannot imagine what's worse than this. If now we have hundreds of calls that we're receiving for people under siege, they're hungry, they're thirsty, there's no water, no food, nothing. And they have martyrs within their own homes. They have dead bodies, in other words, next to them. The situation is beyond catastrophic, and we are rendered speechless because it's unbearable, and we're unable to find the right words to discuss this. Sometimes we're thinking, what are we doing here? Just gathering to talk about this. We have no other choice. I would start giving the floor to the questions because we have so many questions. If we can take 3 to 4 questions, Nibal, Badr, and I'm not sure if we have Nidal among us or not. Someone asked in English, is it possible to provide medical supplies? And would they be able to enter? Of course, the answer is no. To answer the question based on what we've heard, whether it's from Badr or Nibal, this is not an option, not only due to the war on Gaza, but also due to the siege. Another question in English. Why isn't aid delivered through airdrops? Why can't they just drop? So, like what happened through Jordan, they had high levels of coordination through the king of Jordan just for them to bring some supplies, which are not sufficient for even a couple of hours. And they were even wondering if these were received or not. Is that an option or not? But that if you can answer that, then that would be great. And another question was a relevant question, which every other year Gaza is under attack or under why don't we have an emergency plan, whether by the Palestine Red Crescent Society or the civil society organization, since we already know that they're under attack every other years. Would you like to every other year? Would you like to answer this, brother? Thank you. I would like to mention, in terms of humanitarian aid, I believe our answer should be accurate, as some international organizations have started to work on coordination to give priority for some of the supplies and some of the equipment one way or another. And I believe Nibal could give us a better overview of this, but I'll give you an example. We have one of the international organizations who are trying to bring in specific items. So we would be able, through Sharik Shabak, or participate with your people, share with your people to provide them with these items. So we need to answer this accurately. So we cannot say no, but we need a professional answer to address this. So some work is going on this, but it's not sufficient. In the last war, During the last war, I was in Gaza. I was there for 7 days when this evacuation took place, if you remember. It's not a war compared to what's going on now. And also in 2018, I was there as well. But I would like to remind you that up until today, there are certain people did not receive, their homes were not rebuilt. When I used to call it the Towers War, because 2 years afterwards, people did not receive their homes, which they were supposed to have rebuilt after the previous war. Some streets were not allowed to receive certain items, so the tiles were not allowed to enter. So therefore, people did not even take a breath after what happened. If you go from Beit Hanun and you see what happened, you're not talking about infrastructure or safe homes. You're talking about bare minimum needs, necessities that they need. What I hear from all my colleagues in Gaza, they say, we wish that we can go back to what happened prior to October 7. That's the situation was a siege, under siege, lack of supplies, being unable to travel, all the diseases, everything that they what they see today is non-comparable to their life prior to October 7. During the last 10 years, they've received tons of bombs, and up until now, we can see previous the ramifications of previous war. So we're talking about a country under siege for over 17 years. There's no developmental work. There's no infrastructure. What they're doing is just droplets of what's needed. You cannot help or work on any kind of development in a place under siege. What hurts me most is that the thousands of dollars and thousands of shekels poured into this. This money was licensed for specific development for youth. Many people were getting grants and wanted to work and wanted to go to education for scholarships. Unfortunately, now that's being rerouted to provide humanitarian aid. We cannot talk about any development considering such a war. On the other hand, some organizations are working on fundraising for Gaza, but unfortunately, do you think that they are rerouting that to their programs in the West Bank? Personally, through media, I said, let's not repeat the same mistake that we have had in 2014. There were tons of supplies, tons of skids in the West Bank we able to collect, but we it took us 2 months to enter Gaza. We said, thank God that no one would able to provide in-kind support because it's not going to be to enter from the West Bank to Gaza. Can I claim that people are collecting it in West Bank? I don't think anyone with a live conscience could do so. We are using all the funds that we have in the West Bank to be able to spend it in Gaza. And unfortunately, it's painful because this could develop the lives of youth and provide their future. However, this is barely a droplet of what's needed. Even bakeries, when they bombard bakers, bombard people standing in line and in queue to receive a piece of bread, that's an appeal. I'm calling for anyone who has a heart to think of this. We need to provide the supplies and ensure that people, this is a war crime in addition to what's going on. I swear to God, this is a war crime. Nibal, would you like to comment? Because there are several questions. Yes, I would like to clarify in terms of humanitarian aid. We said humanitarian aids are for by PRCS and UNRWA, from received from the Egyptian Red Crescent Society, and then we receive a list to which humanitarian aid organizations. Some of them are the World Food Organizations, other for the Palestine, sorry, from the Qatari Red Crescent, some from the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. So humanitarian aid include water, include food, include relief such as blankets, cleaning aid, in addition to medical supplies and medications. These are the humanitarian aid that we receive. Our biggest problem is ever since they allowed humanitarian aid to enter, first of all, we agree that these are just a droplet of what's requested and what's needed in terms of necessities in the Gaza Strip. Even prior to the to this atrocity, we receive only 3% of the shipments we used to receive prior to attack. So now we have a huge humanitarian crisis, which we need more shipments. Unfortunately, we're receiving less, and this is just like used in order to pressure us. Israel is an occupying power and has the obligation in line with international humanitarian law to provide the basic necessities to the civilians, such as food, water. It was a miracle. And the second question, what should PRCS do considering the shortages that we are facing? Are you trying to, who is PRCS appealing to? People are asking on how they can donate, how they can help. The question is not about having or not having funds or money. The situation is regarding the siege and the systematic deprivation and starvation that they're put under. In order for us to be able to respond to the crisis that we're facing, we need to work at all levels. We need to ensure that we're able to fundraise. Up until now, we don't know for how many years after the aftermath of this crisis and this atrocity, how many years would we need to collect funds in order to cover the escalating humanitarian needs. We have over 50% of the population is houseless. They're homeless people, whether the their cease of fire or end of war. These people would still need to receive food, water, supplies, medical supplies, relief that we need, even in psychological interventions. People need, whether women, children, and all the people who have been affected due to the nature of this atrocity, what they have lived and seen is unbearable. All these people would need lots of time to recoup and be able to overcome bereavement, fear, terror, and everything that they have lived during these difficult times. At the Palestine Red Crescent Society, not only do we provide medical response and rescue support, we also have two hospitals. We have Al Amal Hospital in Khan Yunis and Al Quds Hospital in the city of Gaza. We also have humanitarian aid, and we try to provide them with humanitarian aid supplies, basic needs, foods, in addition to our responsibility to receiving humanitarian aid and supervision of distribution of it. We also have mental support provided at shelters, trying to create entertainment activities for these children, trying to work on psychosocial venting activities in order for them to have just moments of happiness despite the pain that they're undergoing. I actually forgot what we were talking about too. No, not at all. We actually thank you. We have one of the participants among the audience. Mohammed, you're joining us from Gaza and you would like to intervene. Do we have Mohammed among us, ladies? Let's wait for Mohammed. Muhannad Samama is among us. Go ahead, Muhannad. We hope that we can hear you. I'm going to turn off my video in order to allow for the connection. I'm not sure if you can hear me or not. Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead. My name is Muhannad Samama. I'm unable to say much, but I just wanted to highlight a few things briefly. I'm sure that you're all well aware of the situation right now. The line is cutting off. I don't know if anyone heard what he said. We can't. It seems we lost the connectivity, but I couldn't hear him. Anyways, the line was cutting off. I was barely hearing his voice. If anyone else has heard him, please let us know what he said. If Mohammed rejoins us again, this is Bisan speaking, we'll try to allow him to join again and give him the floor. Nibal has left. So the rest of the questions would be addressed to The question is to Badr and Nidal if he's able to and if he's able to join us again. The questions are all addressed who are condi who is posing the conditions on humanitarian aid and who and how can we have advocacy and lobbying in order to ensure that humanitarian aid is allowed. There's a humanitarian aid shipment which we believe would arrive in Egypt on the 20th of November. People who are going to try to access a Rafah border personally, and we hope that this that they would be able to enter. Badr, would you like to tell us how can people donate and who can they donate to in order to ensure that they arrive? I would like to take a moment to mention the capacities. Now there we do have some financial resources, whether the supplies were if we're able to purchase, make purchases, then this would end. So what I'm saying is that we don't have long-term resources to purchase to sustain the need. This crisis is beyond understanding and beyond being bearable. So we do need countries to provide the basic needs of these people to be able, or like we need the resources of countries. In other words, we need huge amounts of resources to be able to support the people's basic necessity needs. The main role of many international organizations, first of all, they should all take on their shoulders, take their responsibilities that what they should do, especially in the medical health sector. Throughout my whole life, I've never seen such crimes, people dying due to lack and shortage of fuel. This is horrendous. People are dying. However, there are basic ethics. There's international humanitarian law. I'm actually shocked towards the silence against a humanitarian cause like this. There are basics which are used, basic ethics. However, Gaza has become under has have become the one-off. I believe law schools should actually use this as their curricula, that this is what happens when international law fails us, because international laws and the millions of people and tens of thousands of people who are demonstrating in various countries, this is a positive note. They themselves are able to lobby for us. Many of these organizations have their weight in their countries, and they can accomplish certain things, such as allowing the humanitarian aid to enter. 500 supplies, which used to enter for us, international and civil society organizations, they used to enter to Gaza. However, the amount of shipments throughout the last 38 days are just less than 1.5 of what's needed. Lots of little influencers and people are calling upon their countries and governments. I believe we are facing a catastrophe beyond explanation. There's a humanitarian obligation towards these people. There's no one who's able to comprehend what's going on. The international solidarity is very important. However, we should not continue to work on the same level. We should stop just listing the numbers. When Al Ma'madani Hospital, the world had an uprise and the opinion role has increased. However, the same number and the same numbers have taken place in other hospitals. So some people should hold up their responsibilities. We have 12,000 persons who we have more over 30,000 wounded persons and injured, and they have not died yet, but they are lacking the medical support and treatment that they need. This is a humanitarian crisis beyond imagination. I believe even if ceasefire happens right now, we need minimum 5 years just to come back to the 6th of October. I'm just talking about the situation when they say that the house would be rebuilt. No, the house is where you have a home, a family, your memories, your passports, your it's your life, everything. Each of us is somehow linked to their own home. Imagine if you have to leave your home and you only carry your backpack and your laptop and in front of the and you would have to just throw your bag and throw in thousands of bags and laptops and their documents, their passports, because the Israelis asked them to drop their bags and leave. So you can imagine there's nothing that you can take with you except the clothes on your back. So the international organizations are requested and required to do so much. This is different than any other situation. Everyone is demanded and should work on providing the humanitarian aid. I receive over 30 voice messages on WhatsApp from various organizations. I reassure you, you won't be able to hear the details of the pregnant women, the mothers, the children, and how to use the they're unable to use the bathroom. They're unable to receive wa potable water. It's so hard for you to, and we even filter it because we're unable to publish it as it is. If war ends tomorrow, what's the advice that we can provide to individuals? How should they donate and where or to who? Because international organizations or big organizations should stand on their obligations. What about the local organizations which are go not going to receive the funds and donations what they used to receive? For example, in Ramallah, lots of organizations had to wrap up and close down their activities because the donors refused to pay or cut off the funds. What's the message that we need to deliver to those who are trying to create a collective change? A structural change through their efforts. The question is very important. There are various credible organizations who are working on the ground. They're actually publicizing what they're doing, and they have a good relationship with the civil society organizations and with the people. Every week or two, I used to go to Gaza, and I have invested by working with people, with the youth. That I used to interact with. I would have loved to hear from Nidal or give him the floor to speak, but unfortunately, we wouldn't have been able to do anything without the volunteers' work. And of course, with partnership with UNRWA and various other organizations, such as the Scouts. I used to say before war, it now is time for us to put work hand to hand, shoulder to shoulder, and do what's needed. Even recreational activities, you're saying you're taking kids out to play, now is not the time of it. No, it is the exact time of it when people are in a shelter that should have 10,000 persons, you have 14,000 to 20,000 persons overcrowded there. It's time to give them, to allow them to vent the negativity, the pain that they're suffering. Anything that we provide to them is needed, is much needed, actually. We work with credible organizations, the priorities would be identified. For example, we have a plan. We work within specific procedures or in preliminary procedures that we have for relief. However, we are just one of many, one of tens of other organizations that should be able to provide the needs, to provide for the needs. And the priorities is to provide housing after the second day of war. We need to wake up from this nightmare. Everyone is going home, but to find nothing but rubble. So this is especially in the northern part of Gaza. We also need to think about supporting several sectors, the sector, agricultural sector, for example. For those who know the topography of Gaza, they know that the agriculture areas are in the north, and therefore they have been bombarded, and there's no way to revive that. And by the way, Gaza has agriculture despite cultivation, but we need to also support the sector of women who have lost their small businesses or family businesses. Those who are left stranded, they do need to have organizations who are specialized to support them. So yes, for those who had some cattle and they used to have milk and they have a family project and they were bombarded or had to sell them, lots of people have called us. They said they want to kill the cows and sell it because they need to it's not about bombardment. Some people which homes have been bombarded. So the situation is more political before humanitarian because the question is the siege. If the siege is not lifted, and if there's no way to uplift the siege from Gaza, then everything is bringing us back to ground zero. We're unable to go to Gaza or communicate with Gaza. Even a transfer from Ramallah to Gaza, we're not allowed to transfer 200 shekels, which is less than $50. If we want to work with a small business enterprise for a women business enterprise, there's even communication with Gaza is under siege, especially between the West Bank and Gaza. It's fully discontinued. I'm going to read what Mohammed said. I'm not sure if he's with us. Mohammed is saying, unfortunately, no one is able to help us or interfere with anything that's going on in Gaza. I'm in Gaza and I can see and witness things that no one can ever imagine. There's zero intervention. Even the communication and internet connection is not available. Everything, live, people are living under darkness between one home and the other. People are waiting for their families to call them just to tell them what's going on in their neighborhood. So the situation is beyond catastrophic. There was another question from Inas regarding trying to conduct an international event. I'm talking about the humanitarian. Just a moment ago, I was talking about the humanitarian support, which, or humanitarian aid, which is the Conscious of the World. You can check their website. And the point is that they want to arrive to Egypt. They're supposed to leave between the 17th and 24th of November. We call upon anyone who would like to go and join those people to get to Rafah border. Please join. We're going to share the link for that. I know that Shadik was part of the organizations that helped the labor workers who were in Ramallah or stuck in Ramallah or the others areas in the West Bank. We'd like to you to give us an update on their status now. Were they returned to Gaza? Because I believe the Palestine Red Crescent said that they are not part of the coordination to return these people to Gaza. And what are the actual numbers of these labor workers, and how can people in Ramallah support these workers and help them? If you answer this question, then we move to the next question. Quickly, there are thousands of them in Gaza because the persons who had permits were thousands, and those who were in the occupied. Unfortunately, there are occupied Israel, especially for. Who work for Arab, Palestinian Arabs who live in the Israeli 1948 borders, and some of them are in the West Bank. Unfortunately, those who were arrested, as you well know, there was about 7,000 persons who were displaced. This was, they just dropped them to Karm Abu Salem, and as you know, we know the details. For those who are in the West Bank, only in Ramallah, they live in Ramallah Recreational Center under Shadik and the auspices of the Palace of Ramallah's governance. On daily basis, we have a program to give them mental support and to listen to them and to have psychosocial support, in other words. Honestly, we gave them the option. In the beginning, we thought it was forceful. They gave them, it was voluntarily. For those who would like to return, they have to register. And we had 200 persons who registered and they went to Jericho. And then at Jericho, 700 per other persons also joined. So 900 in total. Just 3 days ago, they were, and they're okay. Can you communicate with them? Limited communication, but many of the 900 persons who have left, unfortunately, whether it was most of them are from the northern part, so they went there and they found their families at Rafah. And no, they went to war. To me, it's a war zone. And in my opinion, I don't think that they should have went back, but they went back voluntarily to support their family, to try to collect what's left of their families, or to deal with atrocities that they have found, to be there for their families, in other words. And also in Jenin, they're at the Korean Center and we're supporting with them. And this is in Tubas, Tulkarem, and there's various numbers all over. People have helped them in Tulkarm. For example, people such as the Syndicate for Dentists, they're providing them with the support. The government is doing its best. So, and the West Bank, thank God, we're okay compared to what's going on in Gaza and the situation that was there. They're okay. For those who are in the recreational center, I believe that all their needs have been met. They have received the supplies needed. However, what's required is for them to go home in peace, to go home to find their families, to find a place to go to in Gaza. And I hope that this situation would be solved because also we hope that the government of Ramallah would hear this recommendation because it's not really suitable for them during winter weather or fall. So the situation could be better. However, they're doing well so far. We thank everyone who's supporting them. Also, we're going to work with the mothers who were at hospitals receiving treatments, whether for themselves or for their children, as chaperones for their children, and the Palestinian Working Women Society for Development. They're also working with women from Gaza. I believe what's going on in West Bank is good. We cannot say that it's not under control or that it's catastrophic. The catastrophe is in Gaza and beyond catastrophe. People here are donating. We hope that these people get back to their homes safely and to be safe and sound at their homes in Gaza. There was another question about the situation, the humanitarian situation, how people, especially in the South, because what we hear so much from news from the South. There's a female who's asking about the situation there, especially where they're placed under starvation and they're beyond the catastrophic situation, how people are feeling tense and anxiety because they can barely receive their bare minimum just to eat. How can people, let's say, one way or another, how can people bear with each other? This is a very important question. If you imagine a home that should have five people, now houses 50. So the situation in the South is not just catastrophic. People are trying to bear with each other. They're trying to receive the persons who are internally displaced. We're talking about the government. The center governorates Khan Yunis and Rafah. We have four areas in the center of Gaza. So they're trying to receive people. And as you well know, the more the war continues, we're going to face more lack of humanitarian aid supplies and food. You're going to find thousands of people in the streets. You find people trying to purchase their needs, but you find that there's nothing left on the shelves. The situation is getting worse. If you go to shelters, you feel that there's heat coming out of the place because of they're overcrowded. This is what I'm repeating based on what people say. There's a foul smell due to the sewage. You have an overcrowded area. You know that the Gaza Strip is already overcrowded, as you well know. And it's a little bit more merciful than the situation in the north. In the north, there was just bombardment, killing. Anyone who steps out of the hospital is being shot down to death. So the situation, there's no comparison. In the south, it's acceptable or below acceptable, but at least it's livable. However, the catastrophe and the crimes, the war crimes that the occupation is conducting in the north is catastrophic and beyond catastrophic. And I repeat this for the third time, and I apologize. If this continues for one more week, starvation is at the door, is at the corner, because there's lack of supplies. What I'm worried about and what I'm warning about, the people who are left stranded in the south of Gaza, they have nothing. They have nowhere, no shelter. They have no income. I'm asking myself, the person who used to work, the laborer, the person who used to take his wage and purchase things for his home has been demolished.
and he's left stranded, and he's not covered by the Underworld because he's not a refugee, for example, and no one is accepting anyone because there's no room. Regardless of how you're trying to support each other, I need someone to support me. How am I going to support others? I know people who are wealthy. They were wealthy. They left their home and they left with the clothes on their shoulders, nothing but the clothes on their back. So there's nothing. The situation right now is not just humanitarian response. Humanitarian response is just at the moment that ceasefire happens, then that would be the moment that we would start with humanitarian aid. I believe that now everything that we're discussing, without having any political will to change the situation, is useless. Ahmed is posing a question, and I'm not sure, we have not given any statistics or numbers. The number of estimated person who are still under the north, is it true that there are no less than 600,000 persons? And how can we highlight that, especially in order to ensure that the occupation shoulders their obligation towards these people? No one can estimate the number of people there, but I can tell you the number is enormous, because when in Kamal Adwan in Beit Lahia complex, I just asked, just from live witnesses, she said the four towers were full of people, and there's lots of people behind me, and behind me in the school there's lots of people. They're overcrowded. Today there was an activity at one of these schools at Beit Lahia, over 3,000 persons in one school. I believe the numbers are enormous, regardless of how the number of people who are displaced. I believe Jabalia, I can almost say that more than 50% of the people are still at the refugee camp. When you're talking about 50%, that you're talking about 25 to 30,000 persons. And this is from live witness testimonies. They say, I would stay home, maintain my dignity, than to walk in the streets and not find anyone to help me. Those people who said that they don't want to be bombarded and left without proper burial. I heard these people say, leave, leave. The situation is catastrophic. They said, no, we want to stay home and we're going to stay where we at. And I believe in northern Gaza, western Gaza, the situation there is totally catastrophic, beyond catastrophic, actually. And people are not safe within their home because bombardment is starting from the sea, and it's being random. So it's unimaginable. We cannot imagine what's going on. All the wars that we have witnessed, we have never witnessed anything barbaric as this. The atrocities that we're seeing are we're spe leaving us speechless. There's nothing that we can express, or no way to express it. Anyone else would like to pose a question? And please put it in the question and answer box. Unfortunately, Nibal had to leave. This has also made the webinar shorter. You can follow up with Build Palestine after the webinar ends. If you have any other questions that you would like to pose to Nibal or Badr or anyone else, please feel free to communicate with the organizers. And the last question for us to wrap up with, two questions to be honest. Are there any organizations that are able to provide the minimum basic work needed in Gaza, and how? And the second question is, the local organizations which are working in Palestine nationwide. Can you give us some example about them? And then I'll take it from there. Can you give us examples of some credible organizations in Ramallah that we can donate to? And then noting that they are able to communicate with Gaza and provide the needed work. As we've mentioned, there are several credible organizations. Can you please ask him to turn off the video? We cannot hear him clearly. Some of them are working in a West Bank. The Palestine Red Crescent Society receives donations and they work in Gaza, and we know their mandate. Al Ta'awun organization also works in West Bank and Gaza, and they provide parcels. And Shadik also provides through your people working, or Shabak. And there are some organizations do not receive donations. UNRWA is receiving donations through its account. So I believe with the mechanisms that we have limited resources. Those who have headquarters in the West Bank and provide support in Gaza. This is how we succeeded for years. At each war, we say, hopefully this would be the last time, but the last 12 years, we're just providing the same campaign and same support to Gaza. We're able to provide suppliers to provide on the second day of the war because we provide guarantees for paying for them basically through the offices in the West Bank. I advise people, even if it's just $1 to donate, I do recommend it that they do so because just $1 would make a difference. We do need support. We're in people there are in dire situation, whether it's a food parcel, anything would make a difference. Hopefully soon the suppliers would be able to provide supplies for people to purchase, so people would be able to buy some of their needs. Some organizations are providing supplies through what they which purchased. We're also working with UNRWA, and we are using all the facilities with UNRWA, but we're also focusing on people who are out of the UNRWA shelters because these people are left stranded with nothing to fend for themselves. And not only to purchase through UNRWA, I believe the situation is going to be worse, and I hope that we don't get there. We also need some ointments. People have fungus. There's lots of diseases and contamination. There's lots of details that if you want more information, I can give you more information. We have given parcels for women, postpartum women, because we had 50 to 60,000 pregnant women during the war. We have 1,200 women who have given birth during this period, so they do need postpartum parcels. This is not easy. There are special needs for teenagers. We're working with UNFPA on that. Some people are saying this is not important. Everything is important. Everything and anything is important. One more thing that I would like to bring to your attention. People need the clothes are there, the storage houses are there. So even if it's the last season clothes, some clothes are there. Some factories we were able to provide praying clothes or the praying outfit. It's actually good for women because they don't have to change it. It's very practical for them to put on. We actually made them or customized made them. The change of the weather right now, also purchase of clothes. People left with their clothes on their back, so just they need something for the weather. It's important to provide winter clothes, for example, or so we give people a list of this is what's needed, this is how much it's cost. So hopefully this crisis would end soon, and hopefully we'd be able to have an outreach for the people of Gaza. Thank you. I would like to conclude with one more thing. Since we're at a platform trying to encourage people, individuals, and others to provide and support grassroots organizations. The colleagues have provided a link to the organizations that you can donate to by individuals. And we also encourage you all to look into the list of organizations and follow up with Build Palestine. What's the plan during this war, and what would be done afterwards as well? We thank you all, and we thank Nibal, we thank Build Palestine, we thank Badr as well for being our panelists. There was a plan to have another webinar, a follow-up on the 7th of October, but unfortunately it was delayed, and therefore it was changed. The format was changed and the title was changed. I sincerely thank them for all the efforts made and for redirecting their support towards Gaza and towards the situation. We thank you all for sharing your questions, and we thank you all for being with us. Thank you.